If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56diva.com. Lower.com, Equal Housing Lender, MLS 112-4061.
Cook County State's Attorney Kim Fox joins us now to talk about this part of the Safety Act, which will eliminate the cash bail provision in not only Cook County, but throughout the state of Illinois. State's Attorney Fox, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm well. Good to be back. How are you?
Yeah, good to hear your voice again here. Someone's arrested and charged with a crime in Chicago today. What happens? What's new?
Well, the biggest difference is it depends on the charge in which they are accused of as to whether or not they will be released, having to post a cash or a monetary bond, or be released under some other condition, or detained. And so the biggest difference is that cash will not be a determinant as to whether or not someone is released or not.
Are there some crimes for which a person will still automatically be released?
Certainly. So most low-level misdemeanor offenses, people can be cited once they are arrested and given another court date. There's some probationable offenses where there's a presumption that they will be released, but a judge will continue to maintain some discretion. And then there are cases in which someone can be held in detention, detained pretrial. Those are what we call forcible felonies. So felonies involving crimes of violence or use of a weapon.
Can be. So in even those cases, though, it's up to the judge to determine whether or not that person will be released or held, correct?
Correct. So what happens is our office, the state's attorney's office, will have to file a motion asking for that person to be detained. And the judge will look at what is the current offense. Like I said, is it a forcible felony? What are the facts around it?
Mm-hmm.
Has this person had a history of violence in their past or convictions in their past? And ultimately, the judge will make a determination that this person poses a risk to the public if they are released and will be detained. And there's no bail amount. There's no amount of money that that person can pay in order to secure their freedom.
But about that, Kim, is there any instance where somebody could bail out with cash? I mean, that prospect is completely eliminated. That's never an option anymore?
Cash is no longer an option. And truly, part of that was because we saw people who were charged with violent offenses who understand that part of their, you know, enterprise might be going to jail. And some people could get charged and have a $1 million bond, for example, and come up with $100,000. And so what this does is take the arbitrariness of a dollar amount out of the equation and says, if you are a threat to the public, there should not be a dollar attached to that. You should be detained.
And originally it was if you are a threat to a specific person, but it was changed, wasn't it? So that the sort of umbrella of possibility is broader now. If you're a threat to the public, then the judge can certainly order you held, correct?
Absolutely. There was work after the original bill was signed by state's attorneys across the state and other advocates to make sure that the language was as inclusive as possible, that it wasn't just a specific threat to an individual, but a threat to the community at large. And so that was one of the amendments to this law that was enacted about a year ago.
Yeah. And I'll let you know how I feel about that when I see who's getting released and who's being detained. But it would seem to me that a judge could say that about virtually anybody. If you've been arrested on a charge for some sort of crime, I might judge that you're indifferent to laws and we are going to order you held. That's a possibility, is it not?
I would think there wouldn't be that narrow a view of it. You know, one of the things that I think is really important is that we had victims' rights advocates, domestic violence advocates, sexual assault violence advocates, or survivors advocates who pushed for this legislation as well, where we're talking about, for example, you know, people, domestic violence survivors whose abusers were coming back home, who could post the dollar amount and come back home. And we saw that a lot. And so part of what we're saying is that we need a jail that is for those people who are, in fact, a threat to safety.
And
as a reminder, these people have not been yet adjudged guilty of a crime. They've just been accused. And so certainly we want to make sure that judges are using their discretion to hold people based on a threat, a real threat that they pose to the public.
Are there some, though, crimes for which a person is charged and the judge has no discretion? That is, they absolutely must order this person held?
So in most non-forcible felonies, so felonies we would call our lower level felonies that don't involve crimes of violence, the options are release and release under conditions. I should point out that even though we're releasing people, there are conditions that they may have to meet. Some of that might be electronic monitoring or home confinement. It may be a curfew or participation in services. The big difference is cash. And I can't stress that enough, because I think what people have gotten confused is like, oh, now people aren't going to be able to be detained. They will. People can leave yesterday charged with horrible offenses if they wrote a check.
With
the
enough money.
But
my guess is that that does not happen that often. Most of the people accused of these crimes don't have extraordinary financial resources. My guess is they don't cash out that often, do they?
They do. And that's the thing. That's part of what we've looked at. It doesn't happen. Sometimes it doesn't happen overnight. Sometimes it may take a week or 2 weeks. But we've seen people, the bail system has had people, again, with nonviolent offenses, if they are poor, can sit there for weeks or months while they try to get their money
together. To be clear about this, though, Kim, just back to my question a moment ago, but are there crimes for which a person charged cannot be released? Say you're charged with first degree murder. Is it still up to the discretion of the judge, or will that person, by weight of that charge, automatically be held?
The judge still has to make a determination. So certainly first degree murder is a detainable offense. That means that is an offense in which someone can be held without the ability to get out. But the judge will still, it's not automatic. There will still be a hearing where the prosecutor presents the evidence that we have and the risk that this person poses, and the defense will offer what they call mitigation. And ultimately, a judge still has the discretion to say whether that person will be held or not.
So there's also a category, though, for which the person will, in fact, automatically be released. And I think what we have all wondered since this law was first proposed and eventually withheld constitutional muster is which crimes go in which bucket. You know what I mean? I think there's the worry that some crimes, for instance, if I steal your car, but I don't harm you, I don't shoot you, I don't even point a gun at you, but I just steal your car, I want that person to go to jail, Kim, and I don't want them to go out. But it would strike me as that will fall into the first category. That person almost certainly will be released, right?
Yeah, and again, I just have to do the reminder. I understand them wanting to be punished and held accountable. They're still presumed innocent. Bail, just as a reminder, is to ensure that a person returns to court for their process, right? It is not a pretrial punishment. And so I think what has happened with folks is that we've conflated, right? Like, is this person going to come back, or are they going to harm someone else while they are out?
And
so I understand your concern.
Well, sure, and you're here to tell me that they do show up, that in fact they still, and that seems so counterintuitive to me. I mean, I know the research suggests that, and in other jurisdictions that's been the case. I still can't believe that. These are people that were caught red-handed stealing a car. Why in the world would they show up to a court appearance where they're probably going to lose? But you're telling me they do.
They do. And part of it is because they know that the ramifications, and that's still the case under this new system, is if you don't show up, if there is a warrant for your arrest or skipping out on a court date, the likelihood is that you will then be held in custody. So if you're violating your conditions of release, a judge can say, listen, we gave this person an opportunity to be out and come back, and they violated what we've asked, and they can now have that revoked. And so the system has worked. I think the thing that has to be reminded to people, even under our old bail system where people were cashing out, over 90% of those people were coming back to court without another arrest and without skipping out. And so what this is doing is carrying that on. Those people will come back. There's research and data from the University of Chicago Crime Lab to Loyola University and across the country that says that money is not the determinant as to whether or not someone comes back. On the converse, it is why some people languish who shouldn't be in the jail.
which really was the guiding force for this thing all along. And I know that gets lost in discussions about this, including this one. What if you didn't commit a crime? Or what if you committed a crime that was so low level that you shouldn't have to lose your job and your car and your family because you can't get out of jail? Better that you go back and be a productive citizen, or be the honest, productive citizen you always were because you're not guilty of a crime. That said, there is the belief in Chicago that there's plenty of police officers who have lost the will to pursue some potential criminals because they're going to get out the next day. They see them on the street on Monday after they arrested them on Friday. What do you say about that? What do you say to those police officers?
Well, I certainly say that the police officers that our office works with are committed to constitutional policing and committed to ensuring our community safety. And so the narrative that the police officers don't want to work because the bail system is what it has been even before today, I reject that notion. Now, I'm not suggesting that there aren't officers who have been frustrated, as many of us have, as we've seen crime rates fluctuate throughout my lifetime here. But I remind people, I think it's important. I'm a lifelong Cook County resident. I have seen high incarceration rates at that jail. I've seen the consent decree at that jail that sat for decades.
Yeah.
I saw homicide rates that were nearing 1,000 when I was back in high school, and this wasn't the law. And so we have to stop playing into the narrative that is change of a system that has not proven itself to be as productive as we would have liked it to be is somehow going to make it tumble. That if we just were honest with ourselves, that the challenges that we've seen around violence in Chicago for decades has not been tied to cash bail, and then meaningfully said, well, what can we do to address that? I think we get much further. But the officers that I talk to who are committed to keeping our community safe, they do not back down because we're asking them to adhere to a new system.
There is the feeling that when you or I or the police see a gang of kids, pardon me, Brandon Johnson, if you're listening, a group of young people making their way down State Street on a Friday night, and they are wilding, they're intimidating people, they're jumping on cars, nothing happens to those kids. And sometimes the police don't do anything about it. And I think the feeling is that it's because either the state's attorneys don't do anything about it or the judges release them anyway. What do you say about that? What do you say about that scenario?
I just do the historical narrative. I remember this conversation 10 years ago before I was even in office, where there was, you know, a narrative and there was actual cases where kids were going down Michigan Avenue and knocking people down. And I remember Rahm Emanuel was the mayor at that time. I think we have to be honest about the conversations around crime and violence in our communities. It is not about individual leaders. It really is about how do we ensure that young people have the resources that they need, and also that when they commit acts that are putting themselves and others at risk and hurting others, that they're held accountable.
But
we don't take our foot off of the accountability mechanism, but it's not new.
Okay,
and
but
I think what
should happen?
Me is the politicization of it. It's been politicized.
Yeah.
We can go back, John. I can pull up articles from 2013 where we were talking about the same type of behavior. And I don't think that we were saying the same things about Mayor Emanuel that we're saying about Brandon Johnson. And I think we should just stop that.
Okay, but what should happen to those kids in that scene?
Yeah, I mean, I think a couple of things. One, we need to tell them that that's not appropriate. And by that means coming into juvenile court, participating in some type of programming, seeing if there's any needs that they have. What we know is that some kids who, you know, if you're coming to a park with a gun and you're brandishing a gun, that's a different intervention than if you're hanging out and being disruptive.
Okay, but
I think we have to tailor our response to the incident and the child.
I know. Well, it's hard to sort of keep score, if you will, like, okay, here's the action. What's the appropriate measure for the police or the courts to take? But if I see a kid with no gun, but also no good intentions, walking down the street and then jumping up and down on a car and blocking off traffic, I'm not sure what's commensurate punishment for that action, but it would seem to me like just letting them go only ensures that it's going to happen again and again.
Yeah, I'm not encouraging folks to just let it go. I'm a parent, right? If my children were out engaging in that type of behavior, I absolutely would want
them
corrected.
Well, the parents aren't there in this story, so what should the police do? What can the state's attorney's office do?
Well, again, what we can do is that if those people, those young people are detained or arrested and have to be involved in the court system, we have to, one, hold them accountable. This is not acceptable behavior. But I think what gets lost in this is I think people think, oh, if you just lock them up, they won't do that again. And what we're seeing is that hasn't worked. Because if it did, John, I promise you that the rates that we saw 10 years ago, 20 years ago, throughout my entire life as a Cook County resident, we would have seen a marked reduction in this.
I'm glad you said that. And I 100% agree with you on that, Kim. I've said and will continue to say, you cannot put this problem in jail. You cannot jail this problem. It comes from somewhere. You have to take a long view, and people are never patient with the likes of you or Brandon Johnson or the people that say that thing. I think it's a very tough thing to sell when there's video on almost a loop on the internet or TV showing these things happening. Just one more question for you. Will repeat offenders or violators get different treatment than when they're standing before a judge?
Absolutely. One of the things that we have to present to a judge when we're asking for them to be detained is, you know, look, this person who has not come to court has shown a willful disregard for the court process. You need to take that into account because we believe that they are a potential flight risk, as well as when we talk about someone's threat to the public. You know, when we look and see if someone has had multiple gun cases, for example, has been incarcerated previously for similar behavior, those are indicators that a judge can use to make a determination that someone should be held.
You want to be a judge today, Kim Fox?
You know, I don't. You know, I will say that I sat with our team who will be in pretrial court today and listened to them roundtable the cases that have come in overnight. And, you know, these are difficult choices that judges and prosecutors are going to have to make. But I am so proud of the people of the Cook County State's Attorney's Office who take this seriously, and I've seen the commitment of our judiciary to want to get this right.
And
we know that the world is watching, and the stakes are high, and so I feel fairly confident that they are prepared to do this work.
And people will be released today, presumably, who would not have been Friday.
Released without having to post cash. They might have been released. They might have been given an order for release so long as they wrote a check.
Yeah.
People will be released today who don't have to write a check that they might have had to have written last Friday.
Good luck to you. Good luck to all of us. What a pleasure, Kim. Thanks for your time. And we wish us all well today.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We're on the right side of history today, John. It is my hope that this plays out in the way that it has been envisioned.